Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor, the governor of Illinois.
The people of Illinois are entitled to have two United States senators represent them in Washington, D.C. As governor, I am required to make this appointment.
Rod Blagojevich facing federal charges for trying to sell the same U.S. Senate appointment, facing possible impeachment for it, making an appointment that Senate leaders say they'll reject, a position with which President-elect Barack Obama today says he agrees. Appointee, former State Attorney General Roland Burris.
And this is one process. I'm honored that I have been appointed, and we will deal with the next step in the process.
Pat Quinn, Illinois Lieutenant Governor.
Roland Burris has been a friend of mine for 36 years. I have known him. He is a good man. I think he made a mistake today in accepting an appointment from a person such as Rod Blagojevich.
Former Chicago Alderman, political science professor Dick Simpson.
Blagojevich thought that by making this particular appointment of an African-American to serve in the U.S. Senate, that the Senate would be hard-pressed to turn down the appointment.
Will they? CBS News chief political correspondent Jeff Greenfield.
They may have more power to seat him and then expel him. But then the question is, on what grounds do you expel Roland Burris? The misdeeds that everybody's upset about have to do with Governor Blagojevich.
Protesting the war in Gaza. One of several anti-Israeli demonstrations in the West Bank today. CBS News correspondent Robert Berger in Jerusalem, where Israeli leaders have been meeting.
Israel is considering a European proposal for a 48-hour truce. It's a dilemma for Israel because on the one hand, they want to appease anger in the international community. On the other hand, they're putting the pressure on Hamas, and they want to keep the upper hand in this conflict.
4 days of bombs dropping on Gaza, more than 360 Palestinians dead, 4 Israelis killed. More declines for home prices. The price for a single-family home falling another 2.2% in October, down a full 18% from 1 year ago, according to the Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Home Price Index. David Blitzer, chairman of the committee that compiles it.
Unfortunately, the downward trends appear to be firmly in place, and there's really nothing in this data that suggests an early reverse.
So if you've got lowered expectations about the economy, you are not alone. Latest numbers from the Conference Board today, consumer confidence hitting an all-time low in December. Car credit, GMAC's got $5 billion from the federal government. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
GMAC is saying it will now be able to lower the credit score to which it can lend borrowers. With this money, it can lower the credit score from 700 to about 620 at which it will lend people, which means it will open up the pool of borrowers who can get cars.
Wall Street likes that news. A nice advance on the penultimate trading day of the year. The Dow gains 184 points, finishing the day at 8,668. NASDAQ up 40. This is CBS News.
We both feel helpless, worried our house will be worth less in 6 months.
Our for sale sign has been up forever.
We need some kind of short-term incentive.
A real tax credit.
And a low mortgage rate that stays low.
I think if people started buying again...
That's good for our home value.
Our confidence. Our jobs.
I guess the whole economy.
You can help. To learn more, visit FixHousingFirst.com. This message brought to you by the Fix Housing First Coalition.
Who wears Thermacare? People like Ginny Graham.
I love playing with the grandkids, but everyday pain can slow me down.
Try the targeted relief of Thermacare joint and arthritis.
I can feel it working.
Thermacare has patented heat cells that deliver real heat that penetrates deep to soothe joint pain.
Aches, pains, gone. Helps keep me going all day.
Look for Thermacare in the gold box and wear it where it hurts. Use as directed. Look for our coupon up to $1.50 in this Sunday's paper.
As you get older, the experts are saying get up off the couch, not just to keep your body in shape.
Staying active can keep your memory sharp as you get older.
Physical exercise in a number of studies has been shown to improve cognitive function.
In a new Annals of Neurology study, Columbia researcher Scott Small uncovers a possible reason why. Blood sugars rise as we age. These higher levels decrease activity in a part of the brain essential for memory. So he says even if you don't have diabetes, controlling them with exercise is a good thing. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Hey, did you get a lottery ticket for Christmas or the holidays? Did you check on it? Stephen LeClaire, Richford, Vermont, gifted by his mother. It's a December 24th Tri-State Megabucks ticket, which Stephen LeClaire accidentally threw out with some gift wrapping. 2 days later, his wife found out the only winning ticket was sold at a store in their town, not turned in, so she talks him into going through the trash, and now the LeClaires are $650,000 richer. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Why does this cough make me feel like my lungs are going to come out of my chest?
Robitussin knows one of the ways your body clears itself of mucus is by coughing. That's why Robitussin DM Max is formulated with a double dose of the medicine that helps your body clear away mucus compared to Robitussin DM, and it helps control your cough. Robitussin knows the relief you need. Robitussin DM Max. Double the strength against mucus for a reason. Use as directed.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles, and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
War and poverty.
Melvin and the Blue Notes. Wake up, everybody. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. And yes, I know I'm not Peter B. Collins. He'll be back with you on New Year's Day. This is Stephanie Hendricks. Honored to be with you for the next 3 hours. And we're going to have an action-packed adventure. I'm glad you're here with us. We're on the third hour. We're going to be with former Pacific Radio national correspondent and Ramparts magazine editor Larry Bensky. He'll give us his take on the top political stories of 2008 that you may not have heard, stories reported and unreported, and he'll help us understand what's going on now on Capitol Hill and what to look for in the news or what might not be in the news in 2009. That'll be fun. My guest the second hour is Jeff Ruck. He's executive director and founder of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Now, these are the men and women in our government who have hung in there for 8 years trying to keep environmental protections and health protections and all sorts of good things like scientific integrity happening, and you can imagine they've been through a lot in this last presidential administration. So let's find out what they have to think or what they think about and what they have to say about the Obama cabinet picks, including the controversial Department of Interior nominee Salazar. But first, we're going to talk about something that affects every single one of us, every single day, and especially our kids. It has to do with the shampoos we use, our deodorants, lipsticks, toys, water bottles, furniture, and even cleaning products. All these things have chemicals, and they contribute to cancer, diabetes, heart disease, learning disabilities, and other kinds of illnesses that are on the rise. So here are the big questions. How have these chemicals been allowed in the marketplace? How can we regulate them so we're protected? And how can we just sort of take our own responsibility for it and use shopping decisions to protect our families? Well, all of these questions can be answered when we talk about solutions to this huge problem. And there's some amazing people working on this. And three of them are going to join us this hour. And there is my great honor to introduce here Dr. Megan Schwartzman. She's a family physician and a research scientist at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. She's a significant contributor to the California Green Chemistry Initiative, recently signed into law by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And we also welcome, taking time out from his holiday, David Levine with the Green Harvest Technologies. That's a firm that develops sustainable technology working with businesses. So, Megan, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Stephanie. Thanks for having me.
And let's start with you. You were a physician treating people at a clinic in San Francisco, and you were seeing illnesses that you suspected might have something to do with chemical exposure. So tell us about that and how that led you to green chemistry.
Yeah, it's a long, tortuous path. I did my residency at San Francisco General Hospital, and in my clinic there, I was seeing what seemed to me to be a tremendous number of both children and adults who had asthma. And lots of my patients came from some of the most polluted areas of the city, including the Bayview Hunters Point area, where there are two Superfund cleanup sites. There's the highest concentration of nearly 40 different air pollutants that are measured in the city. And it was sort of an easy leap to make from there to the fact that children from that neighborhood are diagnosed with asthma at a rate about three times the national average, and that overall hospitalizations for all chronic illnesses in both adults and kids are about four times the statewide average. So in light of all that, just treating the symptoms of these diseases began to feel sort of like trying to catch a tidal wave in a teacup. And I got interested in taking a broader look at the root causes and the possible environmental triggers of common diseases. The other reason that I got interested in this work is from a broader health, sort of public health perspective, and that's that many chronic diseases that are now on the rise in the U.S., and you referred to some of them like diabetes and obesity, attention deficits, certain cancers, are increasingly linked to exposure to common environmental contaminants. But it's really hard to prove these links. So you take, for example, just one of those diabetes, which, like most diseases, develops from a combination of multiple causes. And in many cases, it appears that chemical exposures can contribute to diseases by increasing a person's chance of getting that disease. But it's if they also have, say, a family history of diabetes, or they don't get enough exercise, or they're obese. So it's impossible to say that one particular chemical causes diabetes, but the point is that we should be trying to reduce all the factors which may contribute to disease, including environmental contamination. So what I found then, like most people do, is that when you start looking for environmental causes of disease, one of the first things you encounter is that there's almost no information on the possible chronic health effects of the vast majority of the thousands of chemicals that we encounter every day in the kind of products and our surroundings that you listed. At the same time, these substances are showing up in people. So there's biomonitoring studies that are finding hundreds of synthetic chemicals in breast milk and umbilical cord blood, as well as in the majority of the adults that are screened in the U.S. And so far as a society, we've gone about both studying and regulating one chemical at a time. And yet, this is in light of this context where there are tens of thousands of chemicals in commercial use. There's 1,000 new substances introduced every year. And all told, there's about 42 billion pounds, that's billion with B, of chemical substances that are produced or imported in the U.S. every day. If you translated those into tanker trucks full of water, that same volume, that would be enough to fill trucks that would stretch end to end from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. and back every single day. So taking this volume of substances and trying to study and regulate them one chemical at a time just seems untenable. It's obviously not going to work. And so what all this points to for me is the need for a much more comprehensive approach to regulating chemicals. And that's how I got from seeing individual patients in a clinic to working on broader chemicals policy.
So, and I'd like to introduce David in here. Hey, David.
Hey.
I'd like to have both of you tell our listeners how you would describe the term green chemistry. A lot of folks haven't heard it before, and they're going to be hearing a lot about it hopefully soon. And so, David, why don't you give us your explanation of green chemistry?
Well, for me, there's a set of basic 12 principles that have been developed by Paul Onassis and John Warner for those that want to look into it deeper. But the basics are is that it's looking to create little harm. That it's basically creating a set of chemicals that, in their very essence, and when used in products, are not going to create the harmful effects that we've been talking about. So from it's really looking at it from a life cycle perspective. So from its very production, you know, for its use in manufacturing, for its use by the consumer, on all over to its disposal, it's not causing these harmful side effects.
And I think we want to point out, when we say manufacturing, a lot of folks do realize, as Megan has described in Hunter's Point, that sometimes, you know, communities living near manufacturing plants or shipyards where toxic chemicals are used are exhibiting these health effects. So when we talk about the life cycle of a chemical, we're talking about the environment in which it's made as well as the environment in which it's used and disposed, right? So
that's exactly right. And so what we're beginning to see is, you know, a range of either from the consumers to businesses to governments that are really looking to a set of alternatives, and that, you know, what green chemistry does is provide the basic foundation by which we can develop the new materials and the new products. But I think what's also different at this moment is that they're really trying to look at the whole system here. So it's not just about a replacement of one chemical for another, but as Megan was saying, it's really trying to understand what are the basic criteria that we're going to use to actually judge whether or not, you know, one chemical and a sets of chemicals are actually safer than others. Because what we don't want to have to do, which is very time intensive and very expensive, is to, you know, to do these individual substitutions, but rather to really create a system for being able to analyze this on a much grander scale. And that's wherein comes the need for government to be able to step in. But in the interim, what you find is that consumers have been responding to some basic, you know, personal health and environmental needs that they're starting to define. So, you know, when you look at the numbers with, for instance, the lifestyles of health and sustainability, there's a grouping under which people have identified there's about 40 million people that are looking and already beginning to purchase with a different set of criteria, a different set of values behind them that value their family's health, that value the well-being and the health of the environment as well as a part of all of that. And so with that sort of driving things forward, then clearly, you know, in this country, a lot of businesses are stepping up and saying, you know, this is a good opportunity for us to, you know, it's not just about stopping toxic chemicals, but this is about new business opportunities for us to be able to step up and do well by doing good, you know, by being able to create materials and products that meet the consumer's need at the same time they solve these other problems as well.
So this is exciting news where we can become more competitive in the workplace. We're going to be back with Dr. Megan Schwartzman from UC Berkeley and David Levine from Green Technology Solutions right after this on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Comedian Will Durst will join us this Friday, January 2nd, for all-new Planet Cruise Comedy. Coming to the Columbia Jazz Center in Santa Cruz, Richard Stockton here to tell you about this comedy variety show with comedian Will Durst.
I'm going to get the vote of every thinking American. You idiot, you need a majority.
Along with political satirist Swami Beyondananda.
It was a Santa Cruz person who invented the world's first solar-powered tanning salon.
At the Cuomba in Santa Cruz this Friday, January 2nd, 8 p.m., tickets $18 in advance, $23 at the door. You can get your tickets in Santa Cruz at Streetlight Records or Gateways Books or online at planetcruise.org. Planet Cruise Comedy, you're going to laugh your glutes off.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in, and very pleased to have with us as our guest Dr. Megan Schwartzman, a family physician and research scientist from UC Berkeley Center for Occupational and Environmental Health, And David Levine, I got your organization mixed up just before the break. It's the Green Harvest Technologies. I apologize for that. And it's so nice. We're talking about green chemistry, which is an exciting new process of reevaluating the chemicals in our environment. And Megan, you had quite a bit to do with the California Green Chemistry Initiative just signed into law by Governor Schwarzenegger. And we know that he's a proponent of business. David's been saying that green chemistry is good for business. Can you tell us a little bit how that worked for you to convince, you know, all the many people you worked with to convince the governor that this was good for California?
Yeah, well, I think David gave a great description of the concepts behind green chemistry. I think it's a two-part process, really. Like he described, this issue of sort of reorienting chemical design to prevent rather than clean up the effects of exposures, sort of this creating chemicals that are benign by design. But on the other hand, it's also about, it's sort of a two-pronged thing. It's also about the policy changes to make that a reality. And policy immediately sounds kind of wonkish and uninteresting. But what we've seen is that we're suffering at the hands of policy sort of gone awry for about 30 years since the Toxic Substances Control Act was passed into law. That's the main statute that governs chemicals in the U.S. other than pesticides. And that statute puts almost no obligation on chemical manufacturers to provide information on the possible health or environmental effects of their products. And it's also the way the law is written, it has virtually tied the hands of the U.S. EPA, making it very difficult for them to act on hazards when they do find them. An illustration of that is that they've been able to regulate only 5 existing chemicals or chemical classes since the law was went into force in 1979.
Let's contrast. There are about 80,000 unregulated chemicals, and they've been able to deal with 5, right?
Right. Right. So that shows you that the way that we've been going about it is pretty untenable. And that's mainly what many, many actors have been responding to. It's what the California legislature was responding to in passing the 2 bills that were just signed into law. And it's what the governor was responding to in initiating this green chemistry initiative and starting that about a year and a half ago. A lot of this is in response to the kinds of things that David was describing of there is a market demand for safer, less toxic substances. But the other reason that it's shifting in that direction is because of changes that have happened in Europe, where they've passed a really far-reaching slate of policies and regulations that govern chemicals that apply not just to European producers, but also to anybody who wants to sell chemicals or products in the European Union. And all of a sudden, that's making U.S. manufacturers, both of chemicals and of products like electronics and clothing and
lipstick,
cosmetics, exactly,
right,
everything,
right,
sort of pick up their heads and go, oh, my gosh, there's a different standard out there in the world, and the ship has really left the dock on this kind of change. And it is becoming an issue of sort of our economic sustainability and our continued competitiveness to fall into line with that. And also, we start running the risk of actually becoming the, you know, it's a dramatic term, but dumping ground for the substances that will no longer be allowed for sale in the European Union and even in China and Japan and India in some cases.
Wow. We're going to have to take a break, just another break coming up soon here. But when we come back, I'd like both of you folks to address a term that I think we'll also be hearing more about called the precautionary principle. Barack Obama has just announced that he would like Stephen Chu to be his energy cabinet secretary, and the chemical industry has all abuzz because Stephen Chu has gone on record as saying that he believes in the precautionary principle, and if he's going to be energy secretary, this can be a problem. Actually, I have just discovered we don't have to go to break for a few minutes. And so, Megan, maybe you could address and tell folks what the precautionary principle means and why it would be something that we would form an energy policy or a chemicals policy around.
Sure, Stephanie. The sort of quickest sum up of what the precautionary principle means is it's based in the concept that we all operate on in our daily lives, which is better better safe than sorry. And depending on the risk, we sort of calculate how much caution we're going to take, depending on the unknowns and what the consequences might be. So this is a term that has come to describe the actions that we might take at a policy level, regulations, are aimed to be protective of human health or the environment in this case.
Okay, Megan, hold that thought. We're going to be back with Megan Schwartzman and David Levine talking about green chemistry.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. I'm Sam Litzinger, sitting in for Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. I'd like to say a few words about... Wait, you didn't hear me? Maybe it's because you're getting old. A new study suggests the aging brain can cause hearing problems even when our ears are doing okay. More after this.
All right, let's get down to some direct talk from DirecTV. At a time when the cost of almost everything around you is spiraling out of control, DirecTV puts you back in control with this amazing offer that locks in your price until 2010. Right now, you can get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV for just $29.99 a month for a full year. For a limited time, ask how to get 3 free months of HBO, Stars, and Showtime. That's 28 of the best premium movie channels free for 3 whole months. Lock in your savings until 2010 by switching to DirecTV today. Don't miss out. Call today. 888-578-DIRECTV. 888-578-DIRECTV. Call right now to get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV for just $29.99 a month for 12 months. 888-578-DIRECTTV. Offer ends 12/31/08 and subject to credit approval. $23 bill credit requires rebate and enrollment in auto bill pay program. New DirecTV customers only. Lease and credit card required. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
Ever been to a party, maybe a New Year's Eve party, where there's lots of background noise and young people seem to be able to hold actual conversations, but you don't know who's saying what? Congratulations, you're old. Researchers say they figured out the problem isn't so much with your actual ears as with your brain. The brain has a kind of dimmer switch that controls the input from your ears, kind of a traffic cop for noise. But as we get older, that bit of brain circuitry doesn't work so well. And the inability to understand a conversation in a noisy room can be one of the first signs of an age-related hearing loss. It already affects one-third of all adults between the ages of 65 and 75. Now scientists are trying to figure out what to do about this. They're focusing on that dimmer switch part of the brain as a big factor in this kind of hearing loss. Now, the brain has a trick or two to compensate for its wiring problems. When you're talking to someone, you're usually facing them, so their words arrive at both your ears at about the same time and at about the same volume. The brain says to itself, aha, I should be focusing on this person and not paying as much attention to all those other people yakking away around here. That helps, but there's still that circuitry problem to overcome. So until the scientists come up with something, they're offering some tips to help you hear better. When you're in a noisy room and trying to listen to someone, look directly at the face to get some clues that might fill in some blank words. And they say don't be shy about simply saying loudly, probably, you know what, this place is too loud, so let's step over here where it's quieter because I really want to hear what you have to say. Hearing problem solved and compliment paid, a win-win. I said a win-win. The Osgood File, Sam Litzinger on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in. We're talking about green chemistry and making America more competitive and making us all healthier in the process. We have on with us Dr. Megan Schwartzman, family physician and research scientist from UC Berkeley, and David Levine from Green Harvest Technologies. David, the industry has always said, and they're saying a lot now with the fall of Wall Street, that we can't really afford to go into environmental protection strategies and economics because we just can't afford to. It costs too much to be green. And I just wondered if you had a different take on that, if you thought green chemistry maybe had the opposite effect on the U.S. economy.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, we could look from the specifics. Like this year, there's been tremendous concern around the use of polycarbonates, both in reusable water bottles and in baby bottles. And what we saw and a lot of this was driven by some nonprofits, concerned around environmental health, but in large part also the general public that was just extremely scared about the science and the research that they were seeing that was coming out that had the potential impact on their own family, their own kids. And so in response to that, they're saying, okay, we don't want these products anymore. So in response to that, it's not that products disappeared completely and business stopped. No, it's the sales of those products made from polycarbonates is what started to disappear from retail outlets and the like. But quickly, for those that had already been thinking about this in advance and realizing and implementing some of the precautionary principle, operating with different sets of criteria about how they were going to produce their products, they couldn't manufacture enough of their products. Companies like Born Free, you have Owens International, an international glass company that just went back into the business of producing baby bottles, opening up manufacturing plants again because there was tremendous demand for the product. So it's not that we're going to stop manufacturing. It's not that business is going to stop. It's actually a boom for doing business. But the idea here is that the products that we're producing are actually causing less harm. They're safer for the environment and for our families. And therein lies a tremendous opportunity. So all the new research and development that has to take place is a boom for the universities and private science labs. The new manufacturing and a lot of these new developments can take place within the existing manufacturing infrastructure. So what we could do is take a lot of the unused plants and retool them to start creating the new products that we need for a greener economy. So we think there's tremendous opportunity here.
Well, and I know yesterday a news advisory was released by the American Chemical Society, which Megan can back me up here, is a group of academic scientists and very well-respected chemists and scientists working on these issues. They have a Green Chemistry Institute, which they've announced a formal partnership with a bunch of companies we're familiar with for our household products like Clorox and Johnson & Johnson and Amway Global, Procter & Gamble, Seventh Generation and Cisco. So there must be some money to be made if these kinds of companies are getting behind green chemistry. So.
I think that's right, Stephanie, and the link between what David is describing and what you're describing and the sort of policy and science parts of this also is that the policies that we've had to date, when I was describing the Toxic Substances Control Act and the fact that it doesn't require health or environmental information to be disclosed about products, what it means is up until now or through now, products just compete on the basis of their price, their performance, and they don't. No one has any hazard information. So consumers, whether they're us in the public or their businesses buying raw ingredients, they don't have the information they need to choose safer substances. And so chemicals can't compete on the basis of their safety. But if we require information disclosure, that gives the safer sort of innovative substances that David is describing under development a way to compete.
And so would we say that we would judge products and decide how to spend our money based on whether companies are transparent with their you know, with the chemicals and their products? Or I mean, should we?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, just we need to know what's in it. And it really, you know, begins with, you know, in part, companies being able to step up and just say what's in their products. And I think it's a difficult thing. Certainly the larger, you know, the company at this moment to sort of go through the whole supply chain and being able to assess every single chemical that's in use is a big job, and that's why individual companies alone are not able to do this. So these ideas of these new sorts of partnerships, of sort of pooling the demand, of aggregating the efforts, and you know, is something that we've been helping to push along as well. And I think then complementing that with the government stepping up and doing this comprehensive chemicals assessment, and also sort of leading the way with some of its own procurement, and sort of saying, you know, governments, you know, at the small and at the national level can step up and actually begin to drive this new economy with their own purchases, mm-hmm. and give support for the businesses that are willing to invest some of their own money in research and development and sort of create these new products that we sort of need, you know, at all levels of the economy.
So on a grassroots level, can we tell listeners about places to go to find out about products? For example, you know, they're getting ready to go to the grocery store. It's kind of like a part-time job to figure out what to buy that's not going to hurt your children. And so where would there be like two or three websites that we could tell them about that would help guide them?
Well, what we'd say is that the, you know, on some of the, on the cosmetics, for instance, this is a campaign for safe cosmetics. And, there's a database that's been developed by the Environmental Working Group. And so that's www.cosmeticdatabase.com. And what that does is sort of allow you to enter in the company or the type of product and begin to get to some of the characteristics and be able to compare the products that you're looking, that you're normally using or ones that you might be considering. And they've also done that with sunscreens as well. And I know that, you know, here's another opportunity for new businesses. There's some new tools that are in development to actually, you know, that will enable you to be able to scan the labels at the store and be able to get a readout of the chemical makeup of at least what's on record of what's in the product itself. And so I think there's, you know, new tools that will be available to us as we move on over the next couple of years.
I also want to point out that the Healthy Legacy Institute has a toy guide so that parents who are concerned about phthalates or bisphenol A, which we know affect children even more than, say, adults, can find out about toys and how safe they are for their children at healthylegacy.org. Megan, could you talk a little bit, I want to get this information in just a little bit, about how children might be more vulnerable to some of the chemicals in common products than adults?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Stephanie, that there's a basic point that growing children, and especially babies, and even as far back, of course, as in the womb, are much, much more susceptible to the effects of any kind of environmental chemical because they're growing so rapidly and because their brains and their organs, all the systems are undergoing rapid development, and they're setting those systems in place for life. So what you get when you develop is what you have for the rest of your life. And so one whole class of chemicals that's referred to as endocrine disruptors are a lot of the ones that we encounter in everyday products, like the flame retardants that are in furniture or the plasticizers, the phthalates that make plastic soft. or bisphenol A that you were referring to, nonstick coatings, those kinds of things. A lot of them are endocrine disruptors, which alter, we could talk about them in more detail, but in one way or another, a lot of the development that happens in the womb or in early childhood. And those effects can be permanent. And that's one of the reasons to take precautionary action. Endocrine disruptors really are a great example of a time when precautionary action is especially important, because it's how you, it's saying we should do something right now, even without definitive proof of which chemical causes exactly which effect in people, but with chemicals that disrupt development in the womb, that work at exceptionally low levels of exposure, that are already found in people, and that have effects that last for generations, those are ones that we should take action on right now, before we even have the exact evidence of sort of the definitive cause and effect.
Right, and I think we should point out to California listeners that California stands alone as a state that has regulations that, and I want to get too complicated here, but as a result of the regulations, have more harmful toxic chemical flame retardant materials in furniture than any other state in the union. So children in California might have higher levels of flame retardants in their bodies.
They do. They've been measured, in fact, and some of the highest levels of flame retardants are in women living in the Bay Area, which is particularly relevant because then fetal exposures are the same as, you know, what a woman has in her body. And it's relevant for the rest of the country because we are such a large economy in California that our product standards tend to dictate what gets used in products all around the country.
And it's ironic because they're complaining about us being too green and having too big of a green influence in Washington, I see in the newspapers. We're going to have to go to another break, but I want to say thank you to David Levine and let you get back with your family on vacation. And thank you so much from Green Harvest Technologies. And, David, you had suggested that if folks wanted to find out more about the kind of work you're doing, to go to sustainablebiomaterials.org. And I wondered if there was any place else you wanted to direct folks interested in businesses that are taking advantage of this new green chemistry and green economy.
Right. I'd say there are a few places that would be great. You know, one is bcorporation.net, which is a new type of corporation that are out there willing to meet comprehensive and, as we've been saying, transparent social and environmental performance standards. And the other is the business NGO Working Group on Safer Chemicals and Sustainable Materials, which are groups like Whole Foods and True Textiles, Seventh Generation, and the like, that are trying to promote the creation and adoption of safer chemical and sustainable material use in a way that supports market transitions to a healthy economy, healthy environment, and healthy people. So those are just a few.
All right. Well, here's to a robust economy that is aimed at not letting people get sick, more sick from chemical exposure-related illness. David, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you.
And Dr. Megan Schwartzman will stay with us from UC Berkeley. And when we come back, we'll meet Dr. Bill Hersey. He's with the EPA Headquarters Scientists Union, NETU. And we want to know what our government scientists say about green chemistry and how they're welcoming in the new change. Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be right back after this.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
If you transfer your IRAs, 401ks, or any retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, and $700,000 becomes $770,000. My name is Stephen Dijon, president of the Dijon Advisory Team. I was on the cover of Senior Market Advisor magazine because I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your broker or banker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 866-515-6669 to receive your free video and brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup at one of our nationwide locations. Call 866-515-6669. It's a new year and it's time for change. Call 866-515-6669.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nikan Robinson. Four on three up the left side. Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Vidy and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
The Arizona Wildcats are coming to the Haas Pavilion this Friday at 5 p.m. to claw at the 11-2 Bears. Cal Bears on KRXA 540, Friday, 5 p.m.
This is Bob Oliver with the Quantum Leap radio program, 9 p.m. Saturdays on KRXA. Wishing you a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and hoping that you will tune in and listen to some of the strange things we talk about on the Quantum Leap. Merry Christmas.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in for Mr. Collins. We're talking about green chemistry and having safer products in our lives and the science around it with Dr. Megan Schwartzman, family physician and researcher from UC Berkeley. And we welcome to the show Dr. Bill Hersey from the EPA NTEU Scientists Union, also a professor at American University. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. The concept of green chemistry, some of the folks listening may already know that these last 8 years has not been easy on the brave men and women in the EPA scientists unions, and those wanting to take a precautionary approach might not have always been allowed by industry-influenced political appointees. What is the feeling among your colleagues and yourself about having precautionary principle involved in U.S. chemicals policy and green chemistry coming in as an influence?
Yeah, I think that the very foundation of environmental protection, as it's spelled out in our laws, really speaks to precaution as the underlying principle. The current structure of the Toxic Substance Control Act, which is a so-called umbrella statute, is perhaps not up to snuff in terms of precautionary principle, but the concepts of environmental management and environmental protection really are based on the idea that chemicals don't have the same rights as people. In other words, chemicals can't go out among us and cause harm, and then we have to find evidence that they've caused that harm and then convict them and then get them off the market. Rather, the fundamental principle of environmental protection is protecting people in the first place, getting enough information together before a chemical gets on the market and causes harm, and preventing things in the first place, rather than trying to fix things after problems have developed. So I think that the staff in general is looking forward to a change in the climate next year.
In the presidential, the Obama administration. Well, you know, we just heard from David Levine, who was talking about how good for business green chemistry is, but Bill, you're no stranger to industry interference in EPA scientists doing their work. And I know that when all the folks were working on the California Green Chemistry Initiative, there was some pushback from industry, especially about revealing the products or the chemicals in their products, because they claimed that they needed business security in order to reveal that that. I've heard some scientists having to go to the European Union to find out what are in products made in the U.S. because we can't find that out here.
Yeah, that's a long-standing problem. In fact, we were involved in a situation like that 10 years ago when we had some issues with carpet that was brought into EPA and caused people to get sick. When we eventually got after that problem, industry did not want to look at what the chemicals were that were causing the problem, and that's a typical situation. And what we really need to do is to have adequate testing of chemicals before they get on the market. And for those that are already on the market, we need to get after adequate testing and good solid risk assessment to see whether they ought to stay on the market. And industry does have it's had a very strong voice in administration policy up to this point, and we need to make some changes.
So I'd like to give our listeners some solid ways that they can participate in this. We've heard a little bit about some URLs they can go to find safer products when they're shopping, and to sort of maybe just pay attention to the chemicals and the products that they buy to make sure they're less toxic, especially for their children. But are there other things that both of you would suggest that they do in terms of paying attention to this issue? I know that there are some ongoing processes here in California with the California Green Chemistry Initiative, and then we have this big change we're all expecting starting January 20th in Washington. Are there things we can do communicating to our federal representatives about how we want this situation to go?
Well, certainly I would be in touch with Senator Boxer, who's in a position to facilitate some changes in the right direction in her position as chair of the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate. And you also have some very forward-looking and progressive people in the House. Representative Waxman, for instance, is in a really good position and has had a great record in this direction. But reinforcing those folks in Congress who want to move legislation forward the Green Chemistry Initiative is certainly something that people should be doing. They should be in touch with their representatives to support the Green Chemistry Initiative. One of the things that particularly strikes me as useful is the fact that I teach environmental science at American University now. In a generation or so, our petroleum feedstocks are basically are on a downhill slope, and to look for non-petroleum based chemicals to base our modern society on is a very important aspect of the Green Chemistry Initiative. And I think we should be supporting research in a big way and looking for alternative feedstocks, biological feedstocks, grasses and other kinds of substances of that type to replace petroleum as the feedstock. We need research money in that direction. We need to train a new cadre and a new generation of scientists to perform the research in that area, and we need federal money to support that.
And Megan, do you echo that opinion on?
Yeah, very much. Bill named a very key player, which is Henry Waxman. He was one of the sponsors of a Kids Safe Chemical Act, which was floated in the last Congress but wasn't expected to pass, but will be reintroduced this year. That's a great bill to get behind, and folks can write to their representatives about that. There's a version on the House side and on the Senate side. In California, the Green Chemistry Initiative that's coming out of the California Environmental Protection Agency, specifically their Department of Toxic Substances Control, which is DTSC, is ongoing and is always open to public comment, and they're available on the web. CalEPA, I think it's .dtsc.ca.gov, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and I think folks Googling California Green Chemistry could probably find
that
it that way,
California
too.
California Green Chemistry Initiative. And in terms of the individual choices we make in our lives, you know, we can go to these websites, and that's useful to a point, but unfortunately that information is as limited as what is available to scientists about the health effects of chemicals. And so there's only so much information that we can get as consumers that will be helpful. There are some choices that people can make, broad sort of precautionary kinds of decisions, like avoiding substances with fragrances, which in general are much more likely to contain a variety of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And choices like that while we're pursuing the larger policy change.
That's great, and staying in touch with the issue. Well, it's a big topic, and this time has flown by. I want to thank Dr. Megan Schwartzman, family physician and researcher from UC Berkeley, and Dr. Bill Hersey. We'll have to have both of you back again to talk more and educate us more. Dr. Bill Hersey from the EPA NTEU Scientists Union at American University. Thank you so much for giving up part of your holiday to join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Stephanie.
Thank you, guys. And this is Stephanie Hendricks, and you've got Jeff Ruck coming up next.
This is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy 2 bottles, you get 1 bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine. You can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Chutzpah or constitutional duty. Blagojevich appoints a senator.
I'm here today to announce that I am appointing Roland Burris as the next United States Senator from Illinois.
The war between Israel and Hamas continues day 4.
Israel pounds Gaza but considers a 2-day truce. I'm Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
This is the CBS World News Roundup late edition. I'm Harley Carnes. The feds say he tried to sell the position, now broad-brushed, tainted or not. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich appoints a senator to Barack Obama's Senate seat.
Please don't allow the allegations against me to taint this good an honest man.
His pick, former State Attorney General Roland Burris. Reporters immediately wanted to know about money.
As far as your law firm, your lobbying firm, you yourself personally have contributed well over, I believe, it's $14,000.
Is it that much?
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot of money for us.
Illinois Secretary of State office says the appointment isn't going anywhere anyway. Spokesman Henry Hout.
The secretary has said he will not countersign the document, nor will the office affix the great seal of Illinois to the document. And what impact this will have on the validity of the appointment is ultimately up to the United States Senate.
What about that? Constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley.
For the Senate to block his becoming a member would be to use the authority to block the legitimate successor of Obama. And I don't see anything in their rules or history that would justify that type of act.
And there's the race card. Illinois Congressman Bobby Rush is saying, despite what they say, Senate Democratic leaders don't dare block Burris from taking that Senate seat because Roland Burris is black and he's needed there. The president-elect has weighed in, Mr. Obama saying he agrees with his party's leaders to reject that appointment. Now this.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh, boy, you've been robbed. Yep. Somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
We both feel helpless. Worried our house will be worth less in 6 months.
Our for sale sign has been up forever.
We need some kind of short-term incentive.
A real tax credit.
And a low mortgage rate that stays low.
I think if people started buying again...
That's good for our home value.
Our confidence. Our jobs.
I guess the whole economy.
You can help. To learn more, visit FixHousingFirst.com. This message brought to you by the Fix Housing First Coalition.
It's day 4. Israeli officials say when they're done, there won't be any Hamas buildings left in Gaza.
There was panic in Gaza as Israeli warplanes pounded Hamas targets, including government buildings and weapons smuggling tunnels. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak.
We will do whatever it takes. We are ready to deepen and widen the operation.
Israel is considering a European proposal for a 48-hour ceasefire. But with two long-range Hamas rockets hitting the city of Beersheba for the first time, Israel remains poised for a ground assault. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
President Bush talked to Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas today. Spokesman Gordon Jandro.
We don't just want a ceasefire for the sake of a ceasefire, only for violence to start up immediately. Or within the next few weeks.
Abbas agreed with the president. Getting Hamas to play by rules like that may be a challenge. GMAC is getting $5 billion from TARP money. GMAC is a bank. It makes vehicle loans. CBS's Anthony Mason.
General Motors could not have survived without this. I mean, if the government was going to spend, you know, $13 billion to prop up GM, they had to spend the $5 billion to prop up GMAC, which is the finance arm that basically finances, you know, between a quarter and 40% of all General Motors sales.
In for a nickel, in for a pound, most auto experts are saying General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler will need more money down the road to drive back to prosperity. Federal mine safety regulators are going to require refuge chambers for coal miners now in all of the nation's underground mines. There are nearly 600 of them. They'll require 15 cubic feet of space per miner and food, water, and air for 96 hours. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
We both feel helpless, worried our house will be worth less in 6 months.
Our for sale sign has been up forever.
We need some kind of short-term incentive.
A real tax credit.
And a low mortgage rate that stays low.
I think if people started buying again.
That's good for our home value.
Our confidence. Our jobs.
I guess the whole economy.
You can help. To learn more, visit FixHousingFirst.com. This message brought to you by the Fix Housing First Coalition.
Who wears ThermaCare? People like Ginny Graham.
I love playing with the grandkids, but everyday pain can slow me down.
Try the targeted relief of ThermaCare joint and arthritis.
I can feel it working.
ThermaCare has patented heat cells that deliver real heat that penetrates deep to soothe joint pain.
Aches, pains, gone. Helps keep me going all day.
Look for ThermaCare in the gold box and wear it where it hurts. Use as directed. Look for our coupon up to $1.50 in this Sunday's paper.
So what's your home worth today? Less, for sure. It's enough to make a grown man or woman.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's Stephanie Hendricks filling in. And if you want to participate this hour and call in, 1-888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Well, it's been a tough 8 years for many of our men and women working for the United States government. Scientists complaining about industry interference with policy that affects our health have a gag order on them. Wildlife biologists and others have been trying to preserve our public lands, have been harassed and punished. Whistleblowers have been threatened. And there's been a man who's been helping these brave Americans throughout it all. He is executive director and founder of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, Mr. Jeff Reck. Welcome to Peter B. Collins Show, Jeff.
Howdy.
Hey. So what are some of the highlights and worst things in this recent times that have been happening to the men and women working in our government who have been hanging in there really trying to do their jobs and preserve our environment?
Well, the biggest thing is that it's become a problem just to do your job. In many cases, scientists, law enforcement officers, rangers, land managers, have to cast a profile in courage just to do what they've been doing for the last 20 years. And one of the things that struck me during the Bush years was the GS grade, the seniority of the people that contacted us, went way up. During the Clinton years, our typical intake or person requesting assistance was, say, a park biologist. During the Bush years, it was a park superintendent or a deputy regional director.
So when you say requesting assistance from you, what you're talking about are people coming to you and saying, help, I can't do my job because the political appointees in this agency, this government agency, are making it impossible for me to work.
Right. What are my rights? What are my options? How do I get out of this? How do I continue to draw a paycheck and look at my face in the mirror with a clear conscience?
And the morale must have been really low. I mean, and the people leaving U.S. government service must have been high. How much can you take of being thwarted in every way?
It's difficult to chart that because in so many of the agencies, they're skewed toward retirement anyway, and that's actually going to be one of the things that's going to be happening in the next 5 years, is that there's going to be a significant turnover, particularly in the environmental agencies like EPA and the Forest Service, and that they're all skewed toward baby boomers who are or will soon become retirement eligible.
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of job openings, maybe?
There will be a lot of job openings.
Oh.
And how they're filled and whether there's a plan to retain some institutional memory remains to be seen. And a lot of the agencies, there hasn't been. And one of the aggravating factors had been the Bush administration drive to replace civil servants with contractors.
Uh-huh.
They tried to, in essence, outsource about two-thirds of the job, and they didn't get very far, but it was not a real booster.
You know, I don't think that our listeners are, or many anybody really, are aware of how much privatization has gone on in the last 8 years of our public lands. And I wondered how the public employees, the Park Service folks and the Forest Service folks have dealt with the Bush administration, you know, basically giving away chunks of our federal forests and national park lands to private interests for mineral extractions. Or I know up in the Tahoe Forest, there are 99-year leases with gated communities with mansions and private golf courses. I mean, they're public lands, but they're certainly not for public use. And a lot of people don't know about this. Has there been any increase in that kind of activity, or do you think that this administration's winding down is trying not to be so flamboyant and exploiting public lands?
There was a spike of that sort of activity during the first term, and for the most part it was stopped largely because of congressional intervention. And some of the ongoing private control is things that dates back for decades. But one of the things that's aggravated problems is, for example, in the national parks, they have about 5 million acres of inholdings. And the park budget for buying new lands with a priority on the lands that are in surrounded by parks has dwindled to virtually nothing. And so as a result, people are exercising their rights to build resorts. We're releasing information tomorrow about oil and gas drilling in the Aztec Ruins National Monument in New Mexico. There's a plan to mine potash all around the Petrified Forest National Park in Arizona. Because the parks haven't had the money to buy the lands that are adjacent or in some instances the subsurface rights, they've been subjected to a lot of pressures that could have been avoided.
Wow. And then also in some of these operations, like logging, there's the use of chemicals and in herbicides that go into stream habitat that affect water supplies and salmon fishing and things like that. So this is what your group is having to deal with, to try to shore up all these attacks on our public lands.
We like to think of it as a giant shelter for battered staff.
Oh, is there any hope with the incoming Obama administration? What do the public employees think about Obama's picks for his cabinet, for example, Ken Salazar, the Interior Secretary?
I think there's a lot of hope, but there's also a growing concern. President-elect Obama gets an awful lot of points for just not being George Bush. but some of the initial picks have been less than inspiring. So Ken Salazar at Interior is somebody who professed not to be interested in the job, and in terms of his record, he's for offshore drilling, he's for royalty relief for oil companies, he's for a lot of things that are more on the Republican side of the aisle, and his appointment has been warmly greeted by both industry and the current Interior Secretary. And when he was introduced in Chicago a week or so ago, he didn't really talk about forest or rivers or wildlife or anything like that. He talked about energy independence, and that was going to be his first priority, and he called it a moonshot. And that sounds very much like the rhetoric we've been hearing out of the Bush Interior Secretaries and the energy plan that was hatched by Vice President Cheney, which was to maximize energy production on public lands.
So it doesn't matter if habitat's destroyed or water sources are affected. They're just going to go after natural gas and oil, I guess. But isn't it going to be 30 years or something like that before that kind of production would even be useful to us?
I suppose so. The idea of talking about energy independence in the short term is very strange, particularly coming from a Democratic appointee of an Obama administration. What we don't know is the extent to which Senator Salazar, if he's confirmed, which he likely will be given a free hand. He has sort of the earmarks of a last-minute compromise choice because there was an awful lot of competition, spirited competition for the job, and I must say that our organization was pushing for Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So when Senator Salazar finally comes into office, I think one of the questions will be what sort of management style does the Obama administration bring to the table? One of the hallmarks of the Bush years has been an incredible centralization of decision-making in the White House, such that virtually every major decision in a park or a forest was really made by the White House and not by the director of the Park Service or the chief of the Forest Service. Does that same thing take place? Is Senator Salazar going to be given the interior lands, which constitutes one-fifth of the entire United States, and say, knock yourself out, just do what you want to do? We don't know, and we also don't know the extent to which the appointees under him, the directors of the BLM and the Fish and Wildlife Service and the other agencies, are going to be allowed to make the real decisions.
Well, right, and haven't there been some sort of 11th-hour motions with the Bush administration to make some of those people permanent civil service positions, in other words, taking a politically appointed position and turning it into sort of a permanent position so they can't maybe...
There has been. Mm-hmm. One of the clearest examples has been in basically the law firm for the Interior Department, the solicitor's office, where six political appointees have been burrowed in, is the term, as civil service managers. And the politicization of science has received a lot of attention, but the politicization of law hasn't. And that office, the solicitor's office, which has a fine tradition, has not enjoyed its golden years under Bush. And so who the next solicitor is and how he or she turns that office around is going to be telling.
And a solicitor in a legal office, what does that mean to us? Are these the people that keep corporations from polluting public lands or violating environmental protection rules? Or
they're the ones that give the legal advice to the agencies that are making the decisions. So we've seen instances during the Bush years where they would basically write sweetheart deals for ranchers or give legal opinions that there was no legal basis for controlling the operations of oil and gas operations on offshore or in national wildlife refuges or even underlying forest wilderness areas. So there's a whole host of places where basically the lawyer's call is going to be the one that sets the decision, and if the lawyer, in essence, is working for the other side, it really does hamstring the agency, which is supposed to be representing the public interest.
Well, I was just going to ask you, if we looked hard enough, would we see connections between the industries that stand to profit from this and the now U.S. government officials that are making these decisions?
Yes, there's very large law firms that have embedded their people in or had them in key positions. One of my favorite stories is one of the people that was a solicitor for a while, William Myers, was from a Western-based law firm called Holland and Hart, and after he was sworn in a private ceremony in a hotel room, in a hotel ballroom, sworn in by Dick Cheney, the next day he brought six of his partners in to give them a private tour of the Interior Department. And they were in the secretary's office, Gail Norton's office, at 8:30 in the morning, wandering around. I don't know what they were doing, but she walked in and hit one of them with a door.
Oh, my. There were so many of them.
yeah. But the idea that, in essence, this was sort of a leveraged buyout, which had taken place.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. Jeff Ruck from Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, we're going to ask you to hold that thought because we've got to go to a break. And if you're listening, you can call and talk to Jeff and ask him what's going on with Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility at 1-888-5-PETER-B, 1-888-573-8372. This is Stephanie Hendricks. We'll be right back on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays from 3 to 5. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show. So please, if you tune in on Saturdays and hear basketball, you can hear me on Sundays from 3 to 5. The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Cornerstone Wellness Center on Cass Street in Monterey. Remember, if you tune in and hear basketball from 3 to 5 on Saturday, I'll be on Sunday, 3 to 5. The Sheila Show.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay Basketball. Hi, this is Rob Hawks, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
The Otters travel to Sonoma State University this Friday for a 7:30 tip, then on to Humboldt State on Saturday. Both games will be here on KRXA 540.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's Stephanie Hendricks with you and our guest this hour, Jeff Ruck from Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. We're talking about folks working for the U.S. government who like to protect our land, our environment, our public health, and what they've been through with the Bush administration and what they have to look forward to with the Obama administration. You can join in the discussion by calling 1-888-5-PETER-B or 1-888-573-8372. Jeff, I know a lot of us don't probably get the social studies education we need in school, and so we don't know exactly how the government works. We've talked a little bit about the Department of Interior and how the new suggested the new nominee for secretary there, Ken Salazar, might be a little more interested in mining natural resources than in protecting public lands. But there have been some really racy scandals coming out of this department, and I just wondered if you could give us just a little taste of what's been happening this last year with the Interior Department.
Sure. The Interior Department scandal meter is probably gauged to the Teapot Dome scandal of the 1920s, which involved giving away oil leases to politically favored friends. What's going on now is probably Teapot Dome cubed. So you have things like the number two person in Interior, the Deputy Secretary, is now in prison for aiding lobbyists in backroom deals and then lying about it.
Wow.
You've got the Minerals Management Service, which is supposed to be collecting oil and gas royalties, doing a number of things that end up costing the taxpayers $25 billion and would be more, but the price of oil is falling. Would have been closer to $50 billion. In that same agency, you also have the recent scandal involving MMS employees having sex and drug parties with oil company lobbyists. And this is in a program that was supposed to be negotiating what was called royalty in kind exchanges. So the oil companies gave the federal government supposedly equal value instead of money, and apparently a lot more was exchanged. As well as scandals involving political appointees rewriting scientific documents in ways that were just completely out of control. And some of the things we experienced were political appointees calling down in agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Service down to the field level and telling biologists to change things. Or one of my favorite stories was there was a report about a prairie dog, the Gunnison prairie dog, 200-page report full of scientific justification for listing it under the Endangered Species Act. And this email came down that says, per Julie McDonald, who was the political appointee, change PD rec from pos to neg. And so what that meant was leave the report alone, but change the conclusion.
Wow.
And that sort of thing had become commonplace. To some extent, still is commonplace and will be probably until noon at January 20th.
And the Endangered Species Act is really a cornerstone, and you can kind of tell whether you've got industry dictating laws about public lands or whether you've got folks who are educated scientists about habitat and about keeping environmental balance going on. Have there been last-minute shenanigans regarding that?
Well, there's been a host of what are called midnight regulations, and one of the regulations would take out major protections that are in the Endangered Species Act and, in essence, allow agencies to self-certify their actions as protective of species. So you're going to have the Highway Administration judging whether or not roads are going to have any sort of effect, and the same would be true of the Bureau of Reclamation on water projects and things like that. And so, in essence, it's saying the Endangered Species Act isn't going to apply to the federal government, and it's going to be a contest, a legal contest, and the position of the Obama administration may dictate the result as to whether that last-minute regulation is going to stand.
So we can be looking to see how the Obama administration reacts to endangered species legislation as an indicator of what kind of Obama administration we're going to have regarding the Interior Department and public lands, I guess.
That, and there's a whole a number of these last-minute regulations that if the Obama administration came in on January 21st, asked Congress to, in essence, veto them through a device called the Congressional Review Act, they would likely undo a lot of the work of the last few months of the Bush administration.
Wow.
If they don't, it's going to take a lot of hard work and litigation and whatnot, but the dead hand of the old Bush administration will extend deeply into the next term.
Oh, dear. I don't want to say hold that thought because I want to be more hopeful than that. We'll be right back with Jeff Ruck and Peter on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
All out war. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Israel's defense minister says what we're seeing now in Gaza is an all-out war against Hamas. And why not? Israel certainly has cause. It's not just attacking a government that may have weapons or that may have conspired with terrorists. It's attacking actual weapons and actual terrorists. The enemy is not halfway around the world. They're right next door, and they haven't just threatened violence. They're firing real missiles. But what does all-out war mean when you're up against an enemy like Hamas that celebrates martyrdom? How do you beat an enemy that defines military defeat as moral victory? Well, you try to boost your own moral cred by protecting civilians. That's why Israel has dropped leaflets, made radio announcements. Look at this AP quote. Israeli forces reached homes by telephone telling residents to flee if they were hiding weapons or militants. An army that calls ahead. I can imagine the phone ringing at the home of a young Hamas militant. Who is that, Dad? Oh, nobody, son, but your mother and I will be going out tonight. Don't forget to feed the cat. So long. Say hi to your friends. But separating militants and civilians won't be enough. Because until Israel can also provide something resembling prosperity to those civilians it's trying to protect, there'll be a new Hamas. Israel had Gaza surrounded before the first shot was even fired, so it certainly can win the military victory. But as we learned in Iraq, it's not enough to have the stomach to win. You must also have the brains to avoid losing after you win. Now this.
Whether you run a small business or a big enterprise, you face similar IT challenges every day, including network security, user productivity, network and application performance, and data storage and email retrieval. That's why over 70,000 businesses like yours count on Barracuda Networks to solve these challenges.
Right out of the box, without IT expertise, at a price that any business can afford.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for a free 30-day trial of any of our security, productivity, or storage appliances.
That's 888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or see for yourself at Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
We all know the economy is experiencing some rough times, but some people seem to thrive even in tougher times than this. Want to own their secrets for yourself? Now you can dissolve away your own barriers and blocks to prosperity and success in life despite negative circumstances. Attend a very special transformational two-day event in beautiful Asilomar. The Monterey Center, your one-stop for mind, body, spirit wellness, proudly presents How to Prosper and Flourish with international personal transformation and success leader Ronaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in Asilomar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring Asilomar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Peter B. Collins will be back with you January 1st. Stephanie Hendricks filling in on the Peter B. Collins Show today with Jeff Ruck from Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. We're talking about all the brave men and women that work for the U.S. government and try to protect our environment who are in the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Jeff, I'd like you to tell listeners a story that when I tell them about this, they're just incredulous that it even happened. And it's something you documented very well. And I'm talking about when pesticide industry officials met with Bush administration officials and EPA political appointees to come up with a very interesting rule, and a rule that the EPA scientists were just totally against. And I just was, you know, I want to hear them to hear it from you, because I don't think it's fiction, really. I mean, it sounds like fiction, but it's truth. So,
well, one of the hallmarks of the Bush administration has been legalizing using human beings as subjects in experiments involving pesticides and other chemicals. And the first attempts to do that were caused outrage in EPA, and we were called by scientists who said that the study protocols were actually being removed from their intranet site, so they gave it to us and we put it on our internet site. And that study was one that was called CHEERS, that was involved recruiting parents at a public health center in Jacksonville, Florida, to enroll their under 3-year-old infants in a program where pesticides and other chemicals were applied in the rooms they primarily occupied for a 2-year period. And if the parents agreed to stay in for 2 years, they got payments that rose over time that equaled $970 and bibs and other inducements. But the one that was most insidious in our view was they got free use of a camcorder to record their baby, and they got to keep the camcorder and their baby's pictures only if they stayed in for 2 years. So when that was exposed, that caused such an outrage that that experiment was canceled, but the overall program and the regulations went forward. And when the regulations were being negotiated in OMB, EPA scientists and lobbyists for pesticide companies met to hammer out the provisions so the testing could still take place with children. And they tried to devise various loopholes, and it's documented on our website, which is peer.org. The meeting notes are almost Orwellian.
Well, right, because the first text of the rule, as I recall this, and again, when I tell people this, they're just incredulous, was that it was okay to intentionally dose pregnant women, abused and neglected children, which was interesting, incarcerated men and women, and children overseas with pesticides and other toxic chemicals. And
the first version of the Bush rule was that anything was allowed, and it was to be reviewed by political appointees on a case-by-case basis. The second version said that you couldn't intentionally dose infants and pregnant women, and they later had to amend it to add nursing mothers to show you how thoughtful they were. But the loophole was that instead of intentionally dosing, if you called it an observational study, as in this CHEERS experiment, where if you got the parents or whoever to sign off to say that we were going to expose the infant anyway, that didn't make it intentional dosing, and therefore it was allowed and is allowed today.
Wow,
so
still stands.
Right before the election, a CHEERS-like experiment based in Las Vegas was put on hold because of fear it was going to cause a pre-election flap. They also had another study that they were still trying to get them to spell out that involved exposing school children to pesticides, and we're sort of at a loss to figure out any reason why school children should be exposed to pesticide on a long-term basis, or even on a short-term basis. But the idea that this was, and the reason for this, the economic reason was that in the mid-90s, the Clinton administration agreed to repeal what was called the Delaney Clause, the Pure Food and Drug Act, that the law used to be you could have not even trace amounts of commercial poisons in food products, and that was repealed because it was unrealistic because there's trace amounts in just about everything. And instead, they put EPA in charge of establishing standards, but those standards had to be 10 times stricter for infants and other vulnerable populations unless there was compelling evidence to the contrary. And that's where human subject studies came in, because industry would offer it as compelling evidence.
And you know, recalling this, and we have to, you know, remind people that this is still in effect. There is still a human testing rule in effect. I remember with that Cheer story, they said that the routine pesticide exposure for your infant, and, you know, as a mom, I have to say there's just no such thing as routine pesticide exposure for your infant. Almost every parent I know would bend over backwards and go out of their way to lock up any kind of harmful substance. That's why they said, do great business selling baby locks and things to keep these things out of harm, the children out of harm's way, and keep these products locked up. But yet, this was just an accepted paradigm that all babies are exposed to pesticides and it's just routine. And so, does that normalize it for the populations that the U.S. government's going in and saying we want to find out about your babies being exposed to pesticides? Does that make it seem okay and normal?
Well, that is one of the concerns, because in the case of Cheers, you had the EPA conducting the experiment. They did it in partnership with the American Chemistry Council in a joint venture.
And I think we should let folks know the American Chemistry Council is a conglomeration and lobbying arm for Monsanto, Dow Chemical, DuPont, General Electric, ExxonMobil, all the folks that make the major chemicals.
And the pesticide groups, which is called American Crop Life.
Mm-hmm.
So EPA's involvement, particularly since they were recruiting a public clinic, you're basically talking about poor people. I mean, the $970 inducement for people to engage in these experiments wouldn't move most middle-class or upper-class people. And so the notion that the government was sanctioning it gave, I think, false comfort to the individuals involved, but I think even more disturbingly, what EPA was trying to signal to the agents, to the private sector, was these are the sort of experiments we will accept.
Mm-hmm.
We will do it as an agency, and then you can do it without limitation. And as a matter of fact, the only limitation is what EPA will accept for regulatory purposes. So the vast majority of the experiments that are going on now, no one knows about, and in many cases they're being done in third world countries. And the only way you know about them is when they're submitted to EPA in order to get approval for something.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's really, it's truly draconian, and it's still going on. I'd like to, we should also point out that one of the pesticide companies involved in the human testing rule, Bayer, coincidentally was involved in the making of gas for the Holocaust. It has a fine tradition of kind of draconian hijinks, and right now is in criminal court in Germany for their participation or their implication in the bee colony collapse disorder, which is where the honeybees are disappearing, and they've been accused of having culpability from the chemicals that they've made that people in Germany believe have caused the bee colonies to collapse. But that's another story for another thing. But tell us what happened.
The EPA today is contending that they can't address what they call the moral ambiguities of their current rule because they're too complex.
Oh, gosh.
And so we would think this would be a clear example where an Obama administration could come in and reverse the policies.
And make it very clear. What do your public employees think about Lisa Jackson being suggested as head of the Environmental Protection Agency?
We work an awful lot with the folks in New Jersey, and she comes from New Jersey and for about 3 years head of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. And when she was named to the transition team, we were contacted by DEP employees who asked us to tell their stories. And they were frankly horrified at the notion that Lisa Jackson would become the head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And they tell stories of the things like the top nuclear engineer in New Jersey was removed from his job after he complained about the lack of independence and safety reviews at one of the nuclear power plants. A scientist who did a chromium study was threatened with her job when she went forward to have it published even after it was ordered to be suppressed.
And let's remind folks, chromium was the chemical in the Aaron Brockovich story that made so many people sick, and there continued reports of communities being contaminated with that chemical from manufacturing. So.
And her successors, who ended up publishing a study, finally getting a study published just last month after it was held on Lisa Jackson's desk for several months, that the risk of lung cancer for people in or near homes that have been declared clean by the state was substantially higher, was not looked upon with favor, and one of the last acts that Lisa Jackson did as she left the DEP was to eliminate the Science and Research Division. The story that was, to me, the most telling was involved a daycare center called Kitty College that was located in a former thermometer factory, I kid you not, and not surprisingly, it was contaminated with high levels of mercury.
Which is implicated in developmental and neurodevelopmental delays in children.
Mercury is not good,
right.
Particularly not right. For infants. And three months after DEP had discovered the contamination, they finally informed the daycare center and the parents. For the previous 3 months, they've been negotiating with a responsible party about some sort of resolution. And this is one of 16,000 contaminated sites in New Jersey. This one happened to be just stumbled upon, and one of the reasons it's so chaotic is that what was supposed to be Lisa Jackson's top priority, which was to establish a ranking system so you could address the most dangerous sites first, never got done. And so all 16,000 sites are, in essence, equal, and the only time the state pays attention to any one is when a corporation comes in to say, I want to develop the site.
Wow. And when we consider that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has abandoned or ignored so many contaminated communities, Dixon, Tennessee, well, we just had the big spill in Dixon or in Tennessee,
right.
that brought to national news attention. But a lesser-known story was in Dixon, Tennessee, where local EPA political appointees notified white residents that there were carcinogens in the water but didn't notify the black residents who now have higher rates of cancer because of that, even though, as I understand it, there were EPA scientists who very much wanted to connect with the contaminated communities but were obstructed by political...
And to give you a sense of how bad things are in New Jersey is the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency had to intervene to take over Superfund sites that hadn't been cleaned up and judge New Jersey as having the worst program in the nation. So if you have instances where New Jersey is repeatedly violating federal standards, one of the other things was she signed off on water quality standards that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, under Bush, a judge, were so weak that they would result in the poisoning of aquatic life. It's just sort of bizarre that this is the person that's going to be promoted to head the entire U.S. EPA. And from what we can tell, her pattern of management very much resembles the current administrator, Stephen Johnson, in that they're both career technocrats who take orders.
So do you think there's going to be some pushback from Barbara Boxer and Henry Waxman and people who are paying attention in Congress when the confirmation hearings happen?
I don't know. We're doing our best to get the word out, and next week we are putting out what we call the 10 questions the Senate should ask. We expect that she's going to be confirmed, but I think we want to lay the markers down so the second there is any kind of repetition of what happened in New Jersey here, that there will be pushback.
Well, let's find out when we come back from this break what our listeners can do to support these efforts to keep the EPA from being a bad agency for public employees and for the public. This is Stephanie Hendricks filling in on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be back with Jeff Ruck right after this.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
And protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Stephanie Hendricks filling in, and we have a few minutes left with Jeff Ruck from Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, and we actually have a caller on the line, and we have John Smith. John, let's hear what you have to say. For any questions for Jeff?
Yes. How are you folks this evening? I hope everybody's doing well. I have a couple of comments here. One in regards to your first hour there, in regards to green chemistry, and this also would follow with this one here as well. It is basically no coincidence that chemical companies would routinely build and continue to manufacture in poor communities, for the simple fact is poor communities do not have the financial wherewithal, neither do they have the political clout as affluent communities do. So that's why there would be an increase in adverse health effects in poor communities around chemical plants. Under the Patriot Act 2, chemical corporations are allowed to keep secret all their activities, including toxicity, biological, chemical, or radiological material from being published to anybody. And that includes the EPA. It is also my understanding that the Bush administration is setting out to tie the Obama's hands when it comes down to environmental protection. And in regards to the Dickson County, EPA was allowed by the judge to bow out as a defendant in the case.
Let's just remind John, let's just remind folks, Dickson County, that's in Tennessee. That's where white folks were alerted to carcinogens in their water, and black people weren't. And then there was litigation brought forth, and so that's the judge you're referring to, and that the EPA was allowed to not be responsible in that instance. So.
That is absolutely correct. There was a report that was put out earlier this year by the Union of Concerned Scientists regarding the interference by the Bush administration upon the EPA. And there's the Bush Scientific Council that all documents, whether they're going to be published or not, and whether people are going to give speeches, when I mean people, I'm talking about government employees, that have to get approval from the White House first before their research is to be published, whether that is at a conference, whether it's going to be published in a journal or otherwise. And I have a document here that basically backs that up from Julie Gerberding, who's the head of the CDC.
Just the Centers for Disease Control, that is another government agency. So.
That is correct, and who did research on the health effects due to climate change, and it took me some time, but I was able to get the entire document because the document that the White House basically published in their inner circle of the scientific community left out the PowerPoint presentation, which had the most effects that, you know, the adverse effects of climate change on health, and they deleted that out. They only provided the text part of the total presentation of Dr. Julie Gerberding, the head of the CDC.
Hey, John, let me interrupt you for a minute, and let Jeff respond a little bit here. Jeff, is this gag rule on government employees still in effect, where people can't talk about their scientific work or information affecting our public health?
In a sense. And the Bush administration has been allowed to interfere with scientific expression largely because there's nothing to stop them. On January 21st, the Obama administration could, by executive order, ungag everybody. He also could sign legislation that he supported as a senator that would give legal protection for scientists in protecting their work or reporting manipulation. So I think one of the real questions is whether these sort of abuses will continue or whether they will be outlawed.
So we only have a couple of minutes here left, Jeff, and I'd like to leave our listeners with something they can do to support the men and women trying to protect our public lands and our health. Are there some specific actions that the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility are asking the public to do to support our civil servants?
Yes, and there's actually a lot of material on our website, which is peer.org, and if you're interested, you can contribute to a legal defense fund for some of these people. We're also asking people to contact the Obama transition to urge them to adopt these sort of policies that protect scientists and also to stop persecuting whistleblowers. There are a lot of cases going on right now that an Obama administration could, in essence, end with a stroke of a pen. And we're calling it the Free the Political Prisoners campaign.
That's great. And folks can find more about that at peer.org, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.org. Jeff Ruck, Executive Director of PEER, thanks so much, and keep up the good fight.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show with Stephanie Hendricks filling in. And up next, we want to hear from you. It'll be a free speech zone with you calling in at 888-573-8372. But more than that, we have Larry Bensky with us, Pacifica Radio National Correspondent and all-around political observer for the past 40 years, sharing his views on unreported and maybe strangely reported political stories of this year and what we can watch for in 2009. So call Larry and me right after this break on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Support just for the problem to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich made a carry right down the middle today in Springfield. He appointed a senator to fill Barack Obama's seat. Now, on the 13th, former Illinois State Attorney General Roland Burris was saying this about the governor.
It's pretty appalling. Should that come out to be the case of what our governor was attempting to do? I find it just reprehensible.
Today, the tune was more understanding.
I know, and I think most of you all know, that in this legal process, you're innocent until you're proven guilty.
What will happen next is a constitutional battle. Will the Senate accept the nomination of Roland Burris? Does it have a choice? Constitutional law experts are saying Blagojevich is innocent at the moment, and he is the governor, so his appointment just may hold. Heads are down in Gaza, but there isn't much room to run for people near Hamas buildings and weapons-smuggling tunnels.
Israel may be putting out feelers for a truce that if Hamas halts the rocket fire, then maybe a new truce could be signed. But Hamas may not be interested. They may actually want Israel to come in on the ground because they're well dug in bunkers and tunnels. They may be able to defend an Israeli ground assault a lot better than they can an Israeli air assault.
CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem. Diplomats from the White House to the UN to Egypt have been trying to work the ceasefire angle. Home values are down 18% from a year ago, roughly 23% from 06 numbers. David Blitzer chairs Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Home Price Index Committee.
Unfortunately, the downward trends appear to be firmly in place, and there's really nothing in this data that suggests an early reverse.
Some of the real hotspots for real estate pain are seeing home values down more than 30%. The economy got stuck in the mud because credit dried up after the mortgage bubble burst, and the government spun up the printing presses to put money back into the system. Now the economy is stuck in the mud because, well, we have run for cover.
Folks are just stuffing that money in their mattresses. They're not spending it at the mall.
Economist Peter Morisi says people read all the headlines.
Folks have been getting lots of news about slow retail sales, sluggish holiday season, and layoffs. This is having a terrible downward pull on consumer confidence.
Consumer confidence, the latest number being 38, is the lowest since the Conference Board started tracking that sort of thing. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 184 points today. The Nasdaq was up 40, and oil prices came back down again to close at about $39 a barrel. In time for New Year's Eve, the famous Coca-Cola sign in New York's Times Square will be green. It'll still flash red, of course, but it'll be entirely powered by clean, green wind power. By itself, that sign consumes enough energy to operate 75 cars for a whole year. The 29 other big billboards at the crossroads of the world have agreed to do the same thing. Go green. This is CBS News.
individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If you're tired of credit card debt with high rates and fees, if you're in over your head dealing with high monthly payments, there's powerful information that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the power to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with low monthly payments you can afford. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-4970. You don't have to declare bankruptcy. Credit Answers represents the highest standards in the industry. We've already helped thousands of people like you save millions of dollars. Just give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help you live better, debt-free. Call for this valuable free information at 1-800-400-4970. That's 1-800-400-4970. 1-800-400-4970.
The sports roster lost some great names this year.
Jim McKay, the legend at ABC Sports, told the world about the massacre of Israeli athletes at the Munich Olympics.
They're all gone.
Bobby Mercer, a broadcaster after baseball. Some thought he'd be the next mantle. New York manager Joe Girardi.
He was a great Yankee, but he was a great friend to all of us.
The late Steelers broadcaster Myron Cope, a Pittsburgh legend.
The bus ran through him like he was tissue paper. Tissue paper, I tell you.
Gene Upshaw, the Raider and the NFL Players Association chief. John Madden says Upshaw
probably did more for players than anyone else.
Basketball coach Don Haskins broke the color barrier at Texas Western, won a title using five black starters. Washington slinging Sammy Baugh, the first NFL player to make passing a key part of the game, never wore a face mask. The Hall of Famer made it to age 94. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
By the way, Christmas week's Nielsen leaders on TV, football, and 60 Minutes. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep. Somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
We both feel helpless. Worried our house will be worth less in 6 months.
Our for sale sign has been up forever.
We need some kind of short-term incentive.
A real tax credit.
And a low mortgage rate that stays low.
I think if people started buying again...
That's good for our home value.
Our confidence. Our jobs.
I guess the whole economy.
You can help. To learn more, visit FixHousingFirst.com. This message brought to you by the Fix Housing First Coalition.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime, toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, brother.
Hey, how you
doing? Big party, man.
Right on.
Marvin Gaye, what's going on? Oh, yes, on the Peter B. Collins Show, and it's Stephanie Hendricks filling in. We were going to hear from Paul LaRudy from the Free Gaza Movement. From those of you who may have been paying attention in the last few hours, a ship going to Gaza with humanitarian supplies and former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney on board got rammed by an Israeli Navy boat, and we were going to talk about that, but we haven't been able to reach Paul, which is understandable because they're probably trying to figure out ways to repair the boat and make sure everyone's safe. But things are really heating up in Gaza, and we want to talk about that and what the Obama administration's position is with this, with a man who's been observing politics for over 40 years. He's a former editor of the Paris Review and a managing editor of Ramparts Magazine, and more recently, former Pacifica Radio Network national correspondent. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, Larry Bensky. Hi, Larry.
Great to be with you, Steph.
So this is kind of a crazier than usual time between Israel and Palestine, and we're going to talk about that a little bit at the top of the show, but with Paul, and he's indisposed, but maybe we'd like to have your opinion, maybe about what is the Obama administration's response is going to be to this sort of more highly revved up crisis than usual going on there.
First of all, we have to look at the timing of it. There's nothing in the military situation or the security situation that we know of that determined Israel's assault by air and by missile and by rocket and unarmed aircraft and all that of Gaza. I think it was determined largely by the political calendar, both in Israel and in the United States. The Bush administration has been singularly unsuccessful, especially with Condoleezza Rice staking what little is left of her reputation on being a successful shuttle diplomat. She seems to have gotten absolutely nowhere in defusing the situation over the past few months. There is an election coming up in Israel where the further right wing, further right than the right wing that now rules, is favored to take over, and that's going to happen in February. And, of course, Barack Obama, as you say, is going to be inaugurated January 20th in about 3 weeks. So I think the calendar that determined this had very little, if anything, to do with the actual military requirements that Israel may be using, it is using as a pretext, but everything to do with the politics in order to be able to do this, to strengthen the hand of those who will, hopefully they think, campaign for office in Israel in February on whatever result they get in Gaza, although they may not get the result they want, of course, and the fact that the Obama administration has been steadfast in saying we only have one president and one foreign policy at a time in this country, and that is George W. Bush's, until January 20th. Having said that, it is, as you correctly state, going to be a significant challenge for the Obama administration to deal with this in a better way than the Bush administration, or for that matter, the Clinton administration did over the past decade or two. We've got a horrific situation in the Middle East, a complicated one, difficult one, which is made much more difficult, in my opinion, by the United States' steadfast support, no matter who the politicians are, for no matter what the government is in Israel, right or wrong. And this gives the United States zero leverage on the surface with the forces who are not happy with, to say the least, or are frustrated to the point of becoming suicide bombers with the status quo in that part of the world. It's a major challenge for the Obama administration, as you say. And the people who have been recruited into the Obama administration so far, I must say, don't give one much hope for a fresh direction. People like Hillary Clinton, people like Susan Rice, people like Dennis Ross are all retreads of the same failed policy that the Clinton administration had, and that's not that much different from the failed policy that the Bush administration had. So it's a very, very preoccupying and worrisome condition for the United States on the foreign policy level, but of course, it's a much more preoccupying and dangerous and deadly condition for the people who live there, the people who live in Gaza, who are now being assaulted militarily by a vastly superior military force, and we don't have any idea how long this is going to keep going on or where it's going to end.
Well, and let's not forget Rahm Emanuel, Obama's chief of staff, who's famous for his sort of pro-Israel at any cost point of view. So I'm just wondering if Obama would have even been able to get elected if he hadn't, that hadn't been one of his campaign messaging points this whole year. He seemed to be steadfast to reassuring people that he wasn't going to let Israel disappear, which was sort of the fear-mongering that was going on.
Well, Rahm Emanuel is not only a staunch advocate of the Israel right or wrong strategy, but he's a veteran of the Israeli army. Israel is the only armed military force in the United States that you can in the world that you can serve in and not give up United States citizenship. And Rahm Emanuel, who's a descendant of people who were in Israel-Palestine, served in the Israeli military. So he's a war veteran or a military veteran of a different army. And that of course, in itself tells you a lot about the proclivities of the United States politics. And I think you're absolutely right. There is no chance whatsoever that if the Republicans and John McCain had been able to find a wedge in the so-called staunch defense of Israel on the part of the Democrats. They would have, and they couldn't. Hillary Clinton, of course, inoculated the Democrats against that largely, and Barack Obama followed in her footsteps.
Wow. Well, that's certainly one of the hottest stories going on right now, and be interesting to watch how that shakes down between now and January 20th. Let's look back to earlier in 2008, and I'd like your take on how the political reporting was of the Iraq War. With that very significant story this year that never ended, unfortunately.
No, and I think it's a disgrace that we have the United States media have largely abandoned coverage of Iraq. The other day in the New York Times, there was a piece about how few media institutions in this country maintain any kind of presence there anymore, and most of it is scaled back. It reminds me, in a sense, of what happened in Vietnam after the United States left in defeat. And there's no question in my mind that the United States enterprise in Iraq has been and will continue to be a defeat, despite all the rhetoric about the surge and the democracy and all of that. It's a catastrophic country that the United States has created over there, catastrophic in a different way from the catastrophe that Saddam Hussein created over there, but catastrophic nonetheless. And the fact that the United States is creeping out as honorably as it supposedly can and hopping over a ways, hopping over a place called Iran in order to start another horrific slaughter, probably, well, not probably, definitely, in Afghanistan, which Barack Obama has made absolutely, there's no equivocation on his part. He thinks that's where the United States military should be engaged in the so-called war against terrorism. But the reporting in the United States media on the situation in Iraq has been disgraceful. Here's a country with minimum figures that I've seen of 100,000 and probably many times that civilian people killed in the course of the United States invasion and occupation. Here's a country with something like 4 million people either gone into exile or internally displaced. Here's a country with, can't even imagine the lasting psychological trauma of what's gone on there on children. And so many of the people in that part of the world are young. To have grown up in that kind of circumstance and passed their time from birth until the ages of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or however old they may be, teenagers now, to have grown up with that and have to deal with that for the rest of their lives with all the trauma it implies, it's an absolute flat-out humanitarian disgrace. The Bush administration, people are, by any stretch of the imagination, any terms that I've ever seen, many of them could be and should be prosecuted as war criminals. And the United States military has done what it's done with absolute impunity, pretty much, because the mainstream media in this country have either been ideologically or, in many cases, physically embedded when they are there with the United States military, with all that that implies, and have really abandoned coverage of that area. The figures of the number of hours that have been devoted on television, which is, after all, regretfully, but still remains the case, the main source of information for people in this country, the number of hours that have been devoted to Iraq coverage versus previous years is tiny, something like 400 hours in the past year. The previous year, there were 1,200. The year before that, 2,000 or 3,000. And the numbers just keep going down. You cannot have a democracy where people make intelligent decisions without information, and the mainstream media has not been giving people information about what's been going on in Iraq. It's a flat-out disgrace.
Well, and as you mentioned, also, the Obama administration doesn't seem to be doing anything that differently than the Bush administration in terms of the information we're getting from our government about what's going on in Iraq, about what's going on in Iran, about what's happening. Now, I heard the messaging, too, about Afghanistan, that that's where Obama wants to go to find Osama bin Laden. What do you think Obama's response is going to be about the increased tension happening in Pakistan as people in the al-Qaeda supposedly, reportedly, are leaving Afghanistan and coming into Pakistan and vice versa?
Well, if there's one thing I learned, and I hope there's more than one thing in my 40 or 50 years of reporting on things like this, we don't often know, in fact, we almost never know, what the real actions of our government are insofar as foreign policy, or for that matter, domestic policy. But let's stay on foreign policy, especially when it involves the military and military commitment. So much of what goes on is done in secret. So much of what goes on is not even remotely supervised or examined by Congress, whose job it is to do so. So much of what goes on is done clandestinely, off the books, private contractors, and all that kind of stuff, that it's almost impossible to know with any certainty unless an event surfaces, like an Abu Ghraib, for example, which brings it to public consciousness, what's going on. I think that there are and have been effective chains of communication between both the Bush administration and the incoming Obama administration with many levels of government and military in Pakistan.
Larry, hold that thought. We want to hear more, and I'll also give folks an opportunity to ask you more questions about this at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation, is being preempted by sports programming on Saturdays in December. We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the Internet. So tune in.
Good Vibrations.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in this hour. Our guest is Larry Binsky, longtime political observer and correspondent to reporting on political affairs. And if you have questions for him or comments you'd like to make, call 1-888-5-PETER-B, 1-888-573-8372. If you're shy, you can give me an email at stephpbc@yahoo.com. Larry, we're talking about the top stories of 208 that folks maybe didn't get the real scoop on and maybe how they were covered. And we mentioned, as we all kind of know by now, that the Bush administration didn't exactly get good journalism in its 8 years. And there seems to be kind of a schizophrenic thing going on with the media, as exemplified by the GOP holiday CD featuring Obama the Magic Negro. It was quite stunning how differently it was covered by Fox News versus CNN. I wondered if you had some opinion about the contrasting of that reporting of that story.
You know, I paid absolutely no attention to that. it is so vulgar and stupid and marginal that it belongs in the trash heap of history, where it no doubt will wind up. And I don't really have a lot of time for trash heaps, but unless you can find treasure in the trash. But I did want to mention, Stephanie, lest we forget, that in my mind, 2008 will always go down in my personal mind as the year that I was most thrilled on election night at any result that ever happened before. And I've been following elections since 1948, believe it or not. I started young. Idea and the general reception in this country and abroad. I went abroad right after Election Day to France of Barack Obama's victory, and the absolutely unthinkable had happened, unthinkable back in the day when I was coming up and among my friends. We were all just talking to each other before, during, and after Election Day. My oldest friends, people I've known for 40 and 50 years, about how absolutely inconceivable this would have been in our youth, and we're all people who have been dedicated to peace and social justice causes on various levels over the years, and the fact that not only could a person of color be elected to be president of the United States, but a person with the quality of mind and the accomplishment and the demeanor of a Barack Obama, the dignity of a Barack Obama, stands so much in contrast to the kind of cheap, sordid, and manipulative people that we've had. People like George W. Bush, people like Bill Clinton, people like Ronald Reagan, with rare exceptions, people who have lacked anything like integrity, in my mind, as president of the United States, not to mention other political offices. So the 2008 election result, no matter what will happen in the future and what has already happened as far as some of the cabinet appointments go, will stand out in my mind as a towering, thrilling thing to be proud of for those of us who live in this country and who want to see it restored to some sort of international and national level of quality, dignity, and pride.
Well, you know, I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I have to say that I was pretty disappointed in Barack Obama. I was actually with you in 2004 at the Flint Center in Boston during the 2004 Democratic National Convention. We were broadcasting live there for Pacifica Radio when he made his big speech that got 30,000 people up off their seats crying and inspired. And I was thinking, wow, this must have been what it was like when you saw John F. Kennedy speak to people, or Martin Luther King, or people of that magnitude, because he's so eloquent and he's so electric when he talks. But then, you know, weeks later, he had some votes in Congress where he supported some not great legislation, keeping the Patriot Act going. Contrary to myth, you know, he did support funding for the Iraq invasion. So I'm glad to hear that you're still inspired. and excited about it, Larry, because I'm wanting to hope, but I'm just a little cynical, I guess.
Well, you know, back in when you and I first started working together, back in the 1990s, and I was late 1990s, and I was hosting a national talk show for Pacifica Radio called Living Room. A book came across my desk. If you actually read books and interview the authors intelligently on radio, you're such an anomaly in the United States.
You know what, Larry? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to have to go to break here in a few seconds. So we're going to hold that thought about a great book that you saw and when you were hosting Living Room with Larry Bensky here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to continue that discussion right after this.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
For the psychic fair. And, of course, personal growth has really expanded since that time. All of the mediums have become larges. But I have since figured out how to avoid earthquakes. When you find a fault, don't dwell on it. I love being in Santa Cruz because this is the leading edge. The leading edge. In fact, I found out that it was a Santa Cruz person who invented the world's first solar-powered tanning salon.
That's the Swami Beyondananda. I'm Richard Stockton with a minute from planetcruz.org.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, Media Matters has chosen Fox News' Sean Hannity for the winner of the 2008 Misinformer of the Year Award. Here's a quick look back at 2008.
Obama's far-left domestic policies,
yes.
Income redistribution, his Global Poverty Act.
His support of abortion, even
abortion.
Late.
After a child was born.
Child's born, Obama
in Chicago.
The state senate wanted the child killed.
It's all about the black community, it's a black separatist agenda. Now,
Wall Street keeps sinking. Could it be the Obama recession, the fear that taxes are going to go up, forcing people to pull out of the market?
Upon hearing the news of his award, Hannity responded in kind.
Our first annual left-wing Obama Mania Media Propaganda Sleaze Award. And this year, the winner goes to the group Media Matters.
That award rolls right off the tongue. For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in. Our guest this hour, Larry Bensky, political commentator and observer. Larry, I had just voiced my cynicism about Barack Obama to you, and you were recalling a time back in the 90s when you found a book that, and you were going to tell me something else. I had to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Sure. That's commercial radio. Dreams from My Father was the book, of course, and Obama wrote it when he was something like 33 years old, and it came in a huge pile of books that came almost every day to the program, and I picked it out and I started reading it, and I was absolutely gripped by it. And I remember telling my producer at the time, Cheryl Flowers, we have got to interview this guy. And lost in the mists of time is why that interview didn't take place. Of course, you know, it's always the ones that got away that you remember among the most. I've interviewed hundreds of people and really proud of a lot of the results, but that one we didn't get. I wish we had, because we would have been able to play that tape a lot in the years since then. But I would advise any of Peter's listeners, your listeners, who have not yet read Dreams from My Father to pick it up and read it. It's not only one of the best political autobiographies I've read ever in this country, it's one of the best autobiographies, period. It tells more necessary truths about the kind of experience that Barack Obama has and the kind of country this is than just about any other autobiography you're going to find over the years. And I realize that's very high praise, but I've been saying it for years. It's really a great book.
And you think it's an antidote to Obama cynicism?
Well, I think somewhere in that man has to remain the guy who wrote that book.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I'm hopeful, Larry, because I have a lot of respect for you, and you're usually more cynical than I am. So this is a good.
Skeptical.
Listen, we have Steve from Salinas who wants to talk with you. Hey there, Steve.
Hi. I think Clinton should get a little bit more credit than you're giving him. I'll call it, for lack of a better word or term, a Clinton peace plan. Before Clinton left office, he was working on an agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, and he had a plan, and Israel had accepted the plan, every single word of it, and Yasser Arafat, the leader of the Palestinians, accepted about 95% of it. So they're very close. And Clinton left office, Bush comes in and says he doesn't care if they keep on killing each other. So they did. And after a few months, Arafat said he would accept the whole plan, exactly the way it was, word for word for word for word. And Bush totally ignored it. Now, Israel had a different leader at the time, but there was a chance.
There was a chance. You're absolutely right. However, I want to go back to the point that I started to make when we had that first commercial break a while ago, which is that we never know what the actual trajectory of foreign policy is, and especially military policy, and especially clandestine policy. And in order to get something accomplished, like a major treaty between traditionally antagonistic parties like Israel and the Palestinians, you have to have an enormous amount of back channel, secret, if you will, preparation and agreement before you step out in front and say, let's shake hands, guys, this is it. And the Clinton administration, for whatever reasons, and I read a lot of accounts of what went on and didn't go on in the Camp David peace plan that you're talking about, for whatever reason, and the Oslo plan, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. I think one of the things you can look forward to in an Obama administration is that he, like all other national leaders in this country and most other countries in the world, is not going to conduct his diplomacy in public. It will be conducted behind the scenes, through back channels, through communications, through people who know each other for whatever reason and whatever way. way. And by the time it surfaces, it's going to be a done deal. It isn't going to be the type of thing that one party or another can back out of. And unfortunately, Clinton got into this much too late and was under tremendous time pressure because it was, as you say, the last days of administration that it began to come out that this or even was convened for this to happen. That's much too late. Obama has, if he has any advantage at all, it's that he has a lot of open water ahead of him as he comes into office. He can start such tractations, if you will, behind the scenes, and I'm sure they've already started in order to try to accomplish something there. It isn't going to be easy, but it's absolutely necessary for any kind of success in administration.
My point is that there may have been a possibility, and Bush totally ignored it.
I think you're right about that, but, you know, the whole history of the Bush administration when it came in the first 8, 9, or 10 months is, hey, we've been elected, tough luck, we don't have to pay attention to anybody, we don't have to put people in office, we don't have to read the intelligence reports. Someone sends a report on August 8th, 2001, saying Obama determined to strike in U.S., we could just file it among the papers, we don't have to have a special meeting, and then we can lie about the whole thing afterward. The Bush administration is a flat-out disgrace, and I think Obama, of course, will be a very, very different type of president with a very different type of administration, having learned from the catastrophes of the Bush administration that we've all lived through.
I hope so, but I'm skeptical because, you know, he promised a, you know, filibuster the FISA bill, and then he voted for it.
Yes, there is that.
And I'm not sure how much we can trust him anymore.
I don't know. Let's give him a little bit of slack. He isn't president yet, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Steve. You know, Larry, I'd like to bring something up. You know, when you look into the Clintons and Obama and sort of, there seems to be two things going on. One is what their relationship is with the American people and their popularity. And if I remember seeing Bill Clinton playing saxophone on Arsenio Hall's show and thinking he was a Bill Clinton lookalike. And then when I found out it really was Bill Clinton, I'd been producing TV talk shows where we had all these celebrity lookalikes. And when I found it really was Bill Clinton and we'd been having George Bush Sr., who, you know, it's hard to get a heartbeat, you know, and here's this swinging white boy playing saxophone. I was sort of like, whoa, I'm going to vote for him. I don't care what his policies are. So I'm just wondering, but when you look closely at the Clintons and you look closely at Obama and you see who put money into their campaigns, you realize that, oh my gosh, these are some of the same mega corporations that put Bush and Cheney in office. And is there going to be a payback expected? Is there going to be policy that's going to reflect some of these nefarious entities that have gotten us into jams with the Bush-Cheney administration? Is there really a change happening on that?
Well, there will be a change, but I think it will not be a change from the capitalist system. And we have an enormously corrupt and corrupting electoral politics system in this country. Among other things, I'm a college teacher of political science, and I stress to my students at Cal State University here in California, Cal State East Bay, the fact that you always must understand that the money that is put into these campaigns and the megabucks have determinative influences in who gets access and how decisions are made, maybe not the decisions themselves, but who gets access and who gets information into making those decisions. Now, Obama, of course, had a much more broadly based fundraising machine than any politician who's ever gone as far as he has in history. But nevertheless, you're correct. Large corporations and wealthy individuals did give a lot of money to the Obama campaign, all that they could, and they will expect some payback for it. This is one of the things that an administration or any politician in this country pretty much has to navigate. And it's part of the disgrace of our electoral system that it is so influenced by money. We have to get money out of politics in this country, and there's absolutely no sign that that's going to happen anytime soon. The so-called McCain-Feingold reforms didn't reform anything. Money just found another way of getting into the system, and with the result that we have.
It was really interesting how McCain and Obama were both campaign reform advocates in a big, big way until they themselves became presidential candidates, and then all of a sudden we didn't hear anything about campaign reform from them. Larry, I'd be interested in hearing your take on how the relationship between President-elect Obama has changed between Congress now that he's president-elect versus what it was like when he was merely a senator.
Well, I think that's a very important point, Stephanie. This I looked this up, actually. This is the first time in history of the United States that two sitting senators ran against each other as a major party candidates for president. I couldn't believe it when I came into my mind, and I went back and looked at all the previous elections. And it turns out to be true. There have been other senators who've run, of course, including John F. Kennedy, but not against another sitting senator. And Richard Nixon, also another former senator. So you have a guy like Obama who has very, very important ties to and relationships with the people on Capitol Hill. One of the things you find out about Obama, if you look into him very much, is he's the type of guy who, when he's not on stage, so to speak, is playing poker with, playing basketball with, schmoozing with, just about anybody who will schmooze or play basketball or poker with him. And it doesn't really matter if they have a D or an R after their name. He has a lot of important relationships with people on Capitol Hill. And not only that, but the choice of Rahm Emanuel, which was, of course, a blinking red light of disaster for those who are interested in improvement in the Israeli-Palestinian situation, as we were discussing earlier. The appointment of Rahm Emanuel, who's a guy who's just as wired, if not in the same way, to Capitol Hill as Obama is, and the choice of many other lower-level officials so far in the Obama administration indicate a very close relationship with Capitol Hill and Congress. And that's the kind of thing the Bush administration never had, and even when they had a majority on Capitol Hill. So I think that's another hopeful sign that some things can be done as far as the extremely dire fiscal condition and financial condition of the United States as well as in foreign policy.
Well, there's been so much deregulation, as we know, of Wall Street that caused the financial collapse, although some folks trace that to decisions made under Clinton. There's been deregulation, as we heard earlier today, of the chemical industry. There's been tearing down of all sorts of laws and these midnight regulations going in that people are concerned about. How much support do you think Obama's going to have in Congress to come in with executive orders to undo some of that stuff, if in fact he chooses to do that?
A lot. How it works, I worked in Washington part of the time for about 12 years when I was national correspondent for Pacifica Radio. And I learned a lot that I didn't know about. I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't, about how Capitol Hill really works. The people who work as staff counsel, as legislative assistant, as researchers and investigators to the chairs of powerful committees, all of which, by the way, are in Democratic hands right now with very strong majorities in the House and Senate, the people who staff the regulatory agencies who are civil servants, the people who are something like 3,000 confirmable and 8,000 overall appointments that the Obama administration gets to make on January 20th, and they've hit the ground running on all of these things. I don't think that midnight rules and regulations that the Bush administration is trying to put through on everything from reproductive health to oil drilling and blah, 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 I don't think those are going to be a major obstacle for the Obama administration. I think that he and his people have already been having many, many meetings with the chairs of important committees on Capitol Hill, and that they have a very clear idea of how to proceed strategically. You will not see the same kind of thing, for example, as you did, excuse me, with the Clinton administration coming in with a first-day order on gays in the military, which is exactly, no matter what the justice and justification for that were, it's exactly the kind of divisive issue capable of raising a feeding frenzy in the media that you shouldn't do right out of the bat. And then the same kind of thing with the off-the-books, non-congressional Hillary Clinton Health Task Force, which is a kind of a screw-you gesture to the elected officials of the United States. I don't think you'll see Obama's people making that kind of mistake. I think they'll proceed in a much more orderly and a much more effective way with the bureaucracy and the agencies as well as on Capitol Hill.
Well, Larry, we'd like to hear more about what you think about Obama and what we can expect in stories reported and unreported in 2009 right after this on the Peter B. Collins Show.
There's more than one side to contemporary affairs. In fact, there's usually more than two sides. On Thursday nights at 10, listen in on KRXA 540, and you'll hear at least four. You'll hear the perspectives of Mark Leonard, Tony Rudy, Billy Sunshine, and me, Jack Hart. We have guests bring their own expertise and experience to their analysis of current events. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for a different perspective. And on September 4th, our show will expand to 2 hours and will start at 9 in the evening and go through to 11. Join us here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Just when you thought it was gone forever, Tomorrow Matters, Talk Radio for a Better Tomorrow, returns to KRXA 540 AM on Sunday mornings, 10 to 11 AM, starting January 4th. Deborah and Spencer Lindsay will dazzle you with the solutions to the environmental and social problems of today for a better world tomorrow. We'll see you Sunday, January 4th at 10 AM, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Installing new transmitter, 50,000 cool ones. New computer with high-end sound card, $4,000. Replacing satellite dish blown off roof in storm, $2,500. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains, priceless. KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
The birds and the airplane did fly.
Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show. Stephanie Hendricks filling in, and we have a few minutes left with our guest, Larry Binsky, political commentator and observer and journalist himself. Dial 1-888-5-PETER-B or 1-888-573-8372, or you can email us at stephpbc@yahoo.com. We have a few minutes left, Larry, and thanks so much for sharing your holiday evening with us. What should we be on the lookout for to see about the news coming out in after January 20th with Barack Obama? What could be some stories that the mainstream media might ignore that we should be sort of keeping our ears pricked up for, and what stories can we expect with the routine regularity that they always happen?
We have to see right away some action on the part of the Obama administration, some meaningful action on the part of the Obama administration and the Democrats who have such majorities on Capitol Hill to do something about the increased unemployment in the United States, about the increase in homelessness, about the increase in hunger, about the increase in people who don't have decent health care or adequate health care. We have to see some immediate results, or I think the Obama administration will be in a quagmire right out of the gate. And I don't mean just speeches and talk about creating jobs. I mean actual money flowing into places where it will produce employment and visible employment on the things that need to be done in this country. When you read the statistics about the numbers of bridges that are in danger of falling down, like the one did the other year in Minneapolis, when you read about the number of school buildings in the United States that are unsafe and unhealthy for kids, when you read about so many things in the infrastructure that have been neglected over the years, and then you put that together with the unemployed people and the underemployed people in this country who could be working on such things, not just physical laborers, by the way, but people in the information technology sector who have a lot to contribute to reviving the economy in this country, you know that there has to be something done and that Obama is going to be counted on and look to be doing something about it. Now, that's not easy, but it is imperative. And what he's going to run up against here is the worldwide structure of finance capitalism, which basically is betting on the fact that the United States is a decaying world power right now and has a decaying currency and has decaying export capabilities, and that others are going to swoop right in and take up the capacity that the United States doesn't have. I mean, the amount of commercial damage that the Bush administration has done to this country as far as weakening our labor force and the things that we produce is just astonishing. It is one of the great underreported stories you were talking about earlier. And I think the first thing we have to see from the Obama administration that people in this country are going to be looking at, you have to remember, most people in this country are very little involved with the political system. Yes, they did vote in record numbers. Yes, there was a lot of attention paid this year. But when it comes to their daily lives, a lot of people don't see the elected officials of this country as relevant at all, because in many cases they're not. And this time they're going to have to be. We're in a very, very bad economic circumstance for lots and lots of people. It's getting worse and worse, and the Obama administration needs to have an effective plan that can show results within, I would say, 6 months, or it's in political trouble.
And what are going to be some signs of that political trouble? Are we going to have vocal outbursts? I mean, we had one today from Cynthia McKinney, who's like, hey, Barack, say something about what's going on in Gaza, because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, President-elect Obama is choosing to defer any information about this Gaza situation to the Bush administration, saying, you know, it's your policy, you live with it right now until January 20th. But Cynthia McKinney is saying, wait a minute, speak up, you've got to do something, this is you know, crazy. Would that start happening in Congress, or would it be just from the general public, you think?
I think you have to have heat from the streets in order for there to be the politicians moving. Cynthia McKinney does not represent the kind of voice that the Bush administration or the Obama administration would listen to. She ran for president. She got something like 170,000 votes nationwide, which is, you know, almost the number of ballots that fall off a table.
She was still my favorite candidate, Larry.
Well, that says something for both you and me, probably. I like her a lot myself, but it doesn't reflect the general thinking or the structure of the American political system. Barack Obama doesn't have to pay attention. This is something that gets lost if you, you know, read The Nation magazine or listen to Democracy Now! Or something like that, and you think, wow, the left this, the left that, the blogs and all of that. The left in the United States had very little to do with the election of Barack Obama, who created his own movement, which in some cases overlapped with the progressive left, but in many cases didn't. It was people who weren't involved and don't follow those media institutions and blogs, etc., but were given hope and were given a chance of change and voted for Obama. That's who he feels accountable to, not to some mythical left in the United States. Now, I think that, you know, of course, if things get bad enough and they're heading in that direction real fast, you may well have demonstrations of people in the streets. You already have people demonstrating by being homeless. That's the biggest demonstration they can pull. Or unemployed, or just plain flat-out crazy. I've noticed a tremendous increase in the eccentric street behavior of people around the communities that I tend to be in the streets of, like Oakland and Berkeley and San Francisco here in California.
And with veterans coming home, we'll have more people probably homeless.
Yes, and more people who are skittish and post-traumatic stress and all of that. So I think the political system, the electoral political system, has to get ahead of this, as I said, right off the bat. And I want to just take a second here before I know we have to go to wish all of Peter's and your listeners the very, very best health and peace in the new year. I think it's wonderful that a program like this is on the air and that something like Air America and here in the Bay Area, Green 960 are on the air. That is one of the hopeful signs for media, and I urge people in whatever way they can to support Peter and these stations that bring him to you.
Thank you, Larry, and I'll take this moment to let folks know it's not too late to make a holiday contribution to the Peter B. Collins Show by going to www.peterbcollins.com, and even a small donation would be appreciated to help keep all these wonderful voices like Larry Bensky on the air. So thanks for giving up your holiday evening, and my best to your family, Larry, also. Happy New Year, and we'll look forward to hearing more of your observations in 2009.
All right. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. This is Stephanie Hendricks. I've been filling in tonight on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we'll be back tomorrow with a special New Year's Eve special. Peter B. will be back on New Year's Day, and as I mentioned, it's not too late to make a holiday contribution to voices on the Peter B. Collins Show so that he can keep your voices happening and communication and democracy alive. Thanks so much for being with me, and I hope you have a wonderful evening.
Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. President-elect Obama says he agrees with his party's leaders who say they won't accept the appointment of Roland Burris to his old Senate seat. But can they do that? Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich named the former state attorney general to the vacancy today, saying he is legally required to do so, and he is the governor. CBS News senior political correspondent Jeff Greenfield says this is more than political, it's also a legal issue.
Both legally and politically, this is a very complex issue that puts the Senate Democratic leadership in quite a pickle.
Constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley says
he's legitimate governor of Illinois. And all of this business about the Senate not recognizing his appointment is a bunch of hokum.
In Gaza today, Hamas digs in and waits for the ground assault and continues to fire rockets into Israel. Israel continues to take out Hamas buildings and weapons smuggling tunnels. It's estimated 380 Palestinians are dead, most of them members of Hamas, 800 more wounded. CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
There's widespread support for this in all of Israel. A poll shows that 81% of Israelis are behind the operation. And, of course, especially the people in southern Israel who have been subject to rocket and mortar attacks for years.
There have been protests in the West Bank and in parts of the Arab world over the fighting. In Tehran, dozens of young men broke into the British embassy residence and trashed it because Britain supports Israel. Home values in the U.S. have turned back the clock by years.
The closely watched S&P Case-Shiller Index reports double-digit housing price drops in 14 of 20 metropolitan areas. From October 2007 to this past October, prices plunged 18%. S&P's David Blitzer.
Overall, home prices are back to the levels they were in about March of 2004.
If you've ever dreamed of living in Las Vegas, Phoenix, or San Francisco, there are some big-time bargains available. Existing homes lost a third of their value in just 1 year. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
General Motors Acceptance Corporation, the bank that loans people the money to buy nearly 40% of the vehicles GM sells, is getting help from the TARP Fund, $5 billion. Analysts say had to happen if the company is to regain viability. Consumer confidence.